You are listening to the Build Peace Radio 2025.
She blog yal na shmeri, she blog jas nasu kriev e, she plondav yar main wa, the hire to shul. She machushle, she maruni, she blaw na nul cumbre e. Is Sara in San Uokti, Ida Nulug is Koshk.
We titled this session, Do We Remember Authoritarianism? On the connection on how societies remember the past, which mechanisms they use, with the current situation, with a race of authoritarian discourses, change of narratives, and an increasing polarization.
There was a transition to democracy after Franco died in 1975. This transition, probably most of you have heard about it, and in some instances it's considered to be a very exemplary transition that has been kind of exported to other countries and whatnot. But a few decades after that, a new generation came in, the generation of the grandchildren, and they started to challenge this idea of this reconciliation or false reconciliation or fake reconciliation that was achieved in the after the end of the dictatorship. And this, so the way in which we are remembering authoritarianism in Spain, so to speak, is going to the crimes that were committed during the dictatorship. No?
Well, a very easy answer would be we are the world champions, not in football, but in obviously at least what we thought of in the culture of memorialization and remembrance. We do have a very broad landscape of memorialization, and we do remember not only authoritarianism, but we have different layers of violence which we at least try to remember, which is of course the Nazi dictatorship, it's the war of annihilation and genocide, it's also the communist dictatorship, and we are struggling about our colonial past. It really contributed to the democratization of the German society during the 80s, 90s of the last century, and it really focused to acknowledge the victims of the Second World War. But so what Germany did in the last 30 years obviously is also focusing on the victims. So their stories of suffering and survival, we did not really focus a lot on resistance. We are not very well in talking about bystanders, the many bystanders around in the society. And I think what is really important today is we did not really focus on the systems and mechanisms of authoritarianism, the system of control, fear, exploitation, small private gains, which kind of integrated basically everybody into the system of authoritarian rule and violence. There are also different victims groups, right? So what we have in Germany, and you will find all over your places most probably, we do have different categories of victims. We have a hierarchization of victims. We have conflicts in between different victims groups. So officially now we are struggling with integrating not only the acknowledgement, remembrance and reparations for Jewish victims, but also for, in historic terms, homosexuals, Sinti and Roma, completely marginalized, struggling for it till today. We also have conflicts of acknowledging victims of the Nazi regime and the communist regime in Eastern Germany. And as I already mentioned, how do we integrate colonialism? It's a system of violence and exploitation too. So people are struggling right now in Germany to integrate acknowledgement, reparation, and truth into the German landscape of memorialization.
So the right and the right wing are the ones who are defending now the concept of reconciliation because it benefited them during the transition to democracy. So this is a real problem because we don't know. People is starting to distrust concepts like reconciliation. So this is a very complex complex issue that this memory backlash. No? So we are kind of stuck in this kind of fight, and I don't know exactly what's going to happen in the future. So.
Very often, also we Germans need to learn from others. So just for a starter, when it comes to especially backlash and distortion of memory, I think. We are kind of frozen to a certain degree in Germany right now because it happened so fast. The rise of the far right, it was unexpected in Germany, to be honest. So you find almost everywhere global strategies to reverse facts, historic facts, to really threaten human rights and democracy. We did have a consensus in Germany, and for me, my generation, that was used to be a very important consensus. And if I'm now saying it, everybody would like scream in Germany, but it's the never again. Never again dictatorship, never again war and genocide, obviously. It was never there, but despite this universal idea, we do also have now a discourse since October 7th and the massacre of Hamas in Israel. We kind of reinvented this idea of specific responsibility into raison d'être. What is it? It's really special in German. It's Staatsraison. And usually you can't even translate it. The very existence of the German state is bound to protecting the existence of the, of Israel. To basically be complicit with the Israeli government, and I'm saying government, and undermining human rights and international law. So our politics of remembrance, politics, not culture, turned into a certain kind of, I don't know, dogma, which is undermining today human rights and international law. But today, somehow, memorialization politics became a driver of conflict within our society when it comes to polarization, but also when it comes to to solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
I think it's very difficult. I think we have to revise all institutional and pedagogical strategies. Being really critical, it's like we cannot continue doing the same because if we continue doing the same, we are losing the battle, so to speak. No.
So first of all, I think when it comes to adapting strategies, obviously it is about activism. So bringing people back to the streets.
I have a slightly different take on the memory culture, and I would like just to flag three points. First of all, when we ask these questions, do we remember authoritarianism? My question is, for what? And for me, the aim of remembering authoritarianism is to prevent human rights violations, no matter where they are committed, no matter by whom, and to prevent genocide. And Germany, as we know, is complicit in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. And so therefore, for me, the question, how does the remembrance culture currently play out, really smacks of authoritarianism itself. what we actually celebrate as that we are the world champion in terms of remembering culture, for me it's very performative. And why do I say that? Because we haven't actually integrated this multi-perspectivity you so rightly touched upon, Natasha. I think we talk a lot about it, and we're very good at talking, but we're not so good at walking the talk. And that.
But I do believe when it comes to the transitional justice paradigms, we need to rethink this strong focus on victims. I do believe that we really, when it comes to a preventive perspective, we need to think about systems and also perpetrators and bystanders, however we define it. There's this strong narrative and focus in the transitional justice field is to a certain degree, it's not systemic. It's not systemic thinking, because it's really a lot about the structures. And humor and arts, well, I love humor. I remember all the jokes people were making in Syria and also in Palestine during, you know, the old Assad regime. And it releases and it creates moments of community and solidarity. So, yes, I do believe it's also important to try every angle to bring, let's say, the courage and the solidarity and empathy into our community and beyond. I do believe, and it might be different, you know, in Spain, whatever, but sometimes you need to create this political momentum and movement and driver on a national level. And we Westerners, Western Germany, whatever people, need to listen to the experiences of those ones who lived the transition after reunification, because we do not understand it.
Well, my name is Davis Smith. I'm 24 years old. I work for a nonprofit called Common Good AI. We're focused on the use of deliberative technology, specifically around community problem solving. Right now, working on a project around building collective legislation in South Carolina.
Hi, I'm Diana. I'm from Colombia. I'm really excited to be in the third day of Build Peace. I'm actually a little bit sad because it's the last day, but I have enjoyed meeting so many people and hearing about all the cool things that you're all doing to improve the world. Thank you.
Hello, buenos dias. Thank you for having a radio at Build Peace. My name is Vic Stansky. I work with Common Good AI, and I'm really passionate about getting these new deliberative tools in the hands of local civil society to be able to change, bring people together, find new solutions, and ultimately build a better world.
I'm so happy to be here with my friends Vic and Deanna and Davis and David. My name is Liz Barry. I'm the executive director at Medigov.org. We work on standards and interoperability to speed self-governance in a digital age. And I'm looking at this radio in a box and wondering, how can my computer club in Los Angeles build one of these?
So, Nerima, it means born at night or in darkness, and I really, really like the name. Yeah, I identify with it a lot.
I find it's meaningful that born into darkness brings something about that's visible, actually. So it seems like your name is like there's action and a lot of imagination that one can think of. So thank you. I was wondering, like, you know, we hear a lot of phrases repeated, like capacity building, stakeholders, policy making. But, like, I wonder in terms of, like, creativity and using imagination to bring about an effective quality that shifts perception, what are the kind of, if this has happened, what are the words and phrases that you've heard maybe in discussions and workshops that are resonating with more of a creative approach that like builds a new imagination of what peace building can be?
I think one of the words that hit me differently was grief and loss. And then just going through sessions around the importance of remembrance or memorialization and, you know, identifying that that pain exists and seeing how does that pain not only affect you and what do you do with that pain, and writing. I never ever thought that we could listen to our bodies from a point where they are sharing pain to let us know something. And oftentimes we ignore it, especially as peace builders. We have a lot of aches because of the things we see. Even it's very indirect sometimes, and sometimes it's completely direct. And we have no idea how it sits within us. And having moments to just release and doing it as frequently as possible, because we do this every day, was something that was really important for me to learn.
Welcome to our closing reflection on the third and very wonderful day of reflection on memory and erasure. And I hope that your time here in the plenary space, but also at the workshops and also in our connective spaces on the breaks and at lunch and with such wonderful people has been really enriching for you.
Soy pertenezco a un pueblo indígena en el sur de México que se llama Mije y he trabajado sobre todo con la defensa de la lengua Mije y los derechos lingüísticos de los pueblos indígenas y la relación entre lengua, territorio y también con las preocupaciones derivadas de esta crisis que estamos enfrentando, que es la emergencia climática, y su relación con el cuidado del territorio, las lenguas, derechos de los pueblos.
What we do is we document, preserve, and verify open source information related to human rights violations in the context we work on. In the case of my program, we focus on Syria. Open source material, that's meaning anything that's published online, mainly on social media.
I am in pursuit of reclaiming the narratives and authorship of our nation because it was taken away by what was written on histories of the Philippines. Its people, its communities, and its nation building.
So plenary conversations today have focused on the theme of memory and erasure, exploring whose story is told, whose memories are lost, and the social and political dynamics and implications of how this happens for us as individuals, as communities, and as society.
Bueno, creo que hay una condición muy importante para construir los diálogos interculturales y la lucha por la diversidad. Creo que tiene que ver con la diversidad de historias que nos contamos. Y no solamente la diversidad de historias, o sea, las narrativas que sostienen muchos de los sistemas de opresión que explican el mundo en la actualidad. Y estas historias no solamente están codificadas en unas lenguas, sino en una multiplicidad de lenguas. Va a ser muy importante oponer utopías posibles de mundos multilingües.
Over Syria has been living under an authoritarian dictatorship since 1970. We learned in history only the history that they wanted to tell us. Majority of Syrians don't know any Syria other than Assad Syria, other than what was projected. Years later, decades later, in 2011, and also inspired by the wave of the Arab Spring, Syrians said enough, went to the street. The response to that was more killing, more disappearance, more detention centers, hundreds of thousands, where we are at a point, a juncture, where we are writing our history. History is not something that's just a foregone past. It's not only in history books. It's not only in tales. It is our current daily reality. Our work in the Syrian archive started in 2014 out of the recognition that there is a lot of those stories are being told through citizen journalists, through activists, through community members who were broadcasting their reality, what they were suffering from, the crimes they were subjected to, basically on social media, because that was the only way to tell the world what was happening to us in Syria at that time. There was no independent media, no access to international investigator, no access to international journalism. Accounts from activists on social media were the only way to tell and document what was actually happening day to day in the country. In 2014, when the Syrian archive was founded, it was from the recognition that a lot of this is at risk of being lost. A lot of it has been lost already. A lot of content is being deleted. We all know how fragile open source content is. Platforms changed their policies. Hundreds of thousands of videos were deleted from YouTube that can have critical evidence in terms of the idea came that we need to preserve this. Maybe one day we will be able to use it. This topic of how the use of archives as a way of memory is something that does not have a clear format or a preset format. And this is something that's clearly currently from the discussions among human rights actors, among art and culture actors within the Syrian civil society scene. There was a lot of discussions about or re-mentioning of the danger of the single story. I think this is one of our responsibilities and our vision is to contribute to the plurality of the story and plurality of the history and temporality of it, because it is not just a snapshot of a time. It's a living memory that it's also a cornerstone for building our future.
Thank you, Jenna. I'm just appreciating the richness that's coming through, that when we open up the topic of archiving and memory, that there are so many things to think about, right? And it's in the how. It's in the how do we do it? What are the processes for doing it? And then what are the potential pathways that can take to shape our current lived experience in the future? And I love the richness is already coming up, just hearing from the first two of you, and now moving to Archie.
Okay. Sir, art that is not just a commodity or object, but rather art that speaks for truth and builds peace. Art that also starts a conversation. Art that seeks to be human again. Huh? All the works that I've shared provides another platform on talking about displacement, killings, dark history, social injustices, and climate justice. Art is very important in this digital age, wherein art simply shows people's struggles, challenge those people in power, art that shapes and ignites people's mind and heart, art that shows how to be a human again, or what it is like to be a human.
Yo vengo de un contexto en el que durante 500 años se ha ido configurando una estructura sociopolítica que es distinta del modelo Estado-Nación. Un antropólogo mije, o sea, de mi pueblo, y otro zapoteco, bautizaron como comunalidad, que es un sistema sociopolítico asambleario en donde se basa en cuatro principios. Uno es la comunalidad de la tierra, es decir, la tierra está en propiedad comunal. También en la comunalidad del trabajo. La otra es la colectividad del gobierno. Y por otro lado está la comunalidad de la fiesta. La fiesta es un momento muy importante dentro de estas estructuras sociopolíticas. Esas estructuras sociopolíticas nos proveyeron de resistencia y de resiliencia, si así lo queremos llamar en español, que nos permitieron poder llegar hasta el siglo XXI, solo por poner un ejemplo. ¿Qué fue lo que nos trajo hasta el siglo XXI? Que podamos seguir existiendo, apostando a la vida y tratando de poner en estas narrativas grandes ideas que pongan en crisis la noción de desarrollo y crecimiento económico al infinito. Una de esas es la noción de equilibrio. Pues estas estructuras de cuidado, o sea, las estructuras de gobierno relacionadas con el cuidado y lejos de la lógica de la centralización del poder que tienen los estados-nación en su arquitectura.
I think in the work we are doing, part of it is about challenging the power of the single narrative, the power of authorities, figures or factions or groups in power that are trying to enforce a single narrative. And by challenging that and by trying to emphasize and put the content creators in their diversity at the center is a kind of challenging this kind of power dynamics that no one can decide to tell which story to tell as long as these people were telling their own stories. It is also challenging the power forced by, for example, the platforms themselves. The power of the content moderation policies that come from a very completely different perspective. It comes from a business-driven monetary perspective. Now, challenging these power dynamics on a daily basis in itself a challenge, but also aspiring for putting care at center into the solidarity as a mean for sustainability and resilience in a way to say that, yes, we are doing this and we are continuing to do this despite all of these challenges.
To please think about your own positionality and to think about the ways in which you can be a participant in the visibilization, the pluralization, the protection, the care, and the solidarity for this work that will allow us to move out of our current paradigm and into what we can hope for as a truly positive peace. And one in which the needs of all our communities, all our neighbors, and especially those who've been marginalized and oppressed can be respected, dignified, and cared for. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Amazing. Build Peace is just one of those places where I feel safe and happy, and the networking, oh, amazing, amazing people. I remember the first times I used to be so scared, like how do I approach, but someone will just come and be like, you spoke about ABCD and I loved you, I loved it, can we talk more about it, you know, like how can we work together to make the world a better place. Finally, I'm gonna miss you guys. This was great. Like, I didn't know it would turn out like this, the radio team. And as you said, we are not stopping here. And I hope
everyone will be departing. But then we have this connection, and we are connected by this tool, which is a radio, you know, and connect and keep praying for each other.
And it's nice to be part of a team and speaking about the radio. And thank you all for doing this, and peace is in the air, and
we are a community to really feel this togetherness, and we are not alone in what we're doing, even though the specific work might be very overwhelming and it's way too much work for just one person or for your little team, but we can support each other, we can be there for each other, and we can continue to deepen our relations for each other. And I think also the radio is a great way to do that.
This, for now, the signal is going off. We're going to be off the air for some time. I would like to thank everybody who tuned in and everybody who listened to this Build Peace 2025 radio from Barcelona, from Santa Coloma de Gramenet.